For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with another readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and a top of the morning to the good people of Dublin, Ireland, which is number 23 on our all-time list of views by city. And then, a bottom of the shoe to the usual suspects in the usual high dudgeon about Hurricane Helene. One writer on Unheard called it America's Chernobyl moment, and for bad measure added, quote, bringing once-in-a-thousand-years levels of rainfall, end quote. A piece in The Atlantic explained that flood risk maps can't be trusted, quote, in a rapidly changing climate, end quote. Harper's Bazaar went with, quote, I never thought climate change would drive me from my mountain home, end quote. And David Wallace Wells galloped through the streets of the New York Times, hollering, the climate is coming, the climate is coming, while the populace slumbered, prompting him to snarl, quote, you might have thought, not that long ago, that the arrival of extreme weather could wake us up belatedly from climate complacency. But the dull drumbeat of disaster seems almost to be putting us to sleep instead, end quote. Except that what arrived was a hurricane during hurricane season, which is not without precedent. And this season, despite one bad storm and worse government response, and possibly with more of both to follow, has been comparatively quiet, contrary to alarmist predictions. Having some hurricanes in what has, for a great many decades, been called hurricane season isn't proof that everything has changed, but that it's the same old, including in this case, this massive damage to Asheville, North Carolina. As Steve Malloy points out, that town experienced similar troubles back in 1940 and in 1916, in both cases so bad that generations later, locals could point to watermarks on their walls from the two events. So, what can explain all that rainfall, since climate didn't change until 1988 or so? On the other hand, and speaking of history, we do want to note that the Unheard author, Malcolm Cayuni, wasn't banging on about climate change. Indeed, he never used the word climate at all. Instead, he was arguing that, quote, President George Bush's response to Katrina was criticized at the time for being lumberingly slow and ineffective. But the relief effort being mounted now is a pale shadow of what was done a mere 19 years ago, and that makes the silence around this disaster even more ominous, end quote. In his view, a major problem is American imperial overstretch, which is paralyzing the government at home, including when it comes to disaster relief, which is why he compares it to Chernobyl, which devastatingly revealed the incompetence and dishonesty of the Soviet Empire in its dying days. So, if the US really is in anything like that kind of trouble, maybe the solution is to stop trying to make the world safe for weather and get back to fundamentals, including disaster relief that relieves disasters. But it's hard, because when it comes to what used quaintly to be called the environment, there's the dreaded climate change monster and then some other silly stuff like pollution, and even sillier responses like banning plastic straws. But at the risk of being called denialists, delayerists, or distractionists, or somethingists, we do want to point to a giant solar flare. Specifically, the Epoch Times reports, quote, the sun emitted a powerful solar flare on October 3, according to NASA, prompting the Space Weather Prediction Center to issue a geomagnetic storm watch due to the forecasted arrival of coronal mass ejections, end quote. Yeah, back to that existential threat to life on Earth, CO2. But a few climate history geeks who remember the Carrington event might spare a thought for other things. That Carrington event hit back in 1859, when the only thing to disrupt was telegraphs, which duly shot sparks and scared people. Oh, and disturbed the sleep of some miners. Apparently some in the Rockies thought the incredibly bright glow of this huge gust of solar wind hitting the atmosphere was the dawn. The Carrington event remains, quote, the most intense geomagnetic storm in recorded history, end quote, or so Wikipedia says, though, as always, our first response is, how do you know? To be fair, there's certainly been nothing like it ever since, despite several of these storms in the mid-20th century that did cause widespread radio disruption. But imagine something of the magnitude of the Carrington event hitting today and pulverizing the satellites and the microchips on which we depend. And imagine if we'd been so panicked about CO2 that we didn't make any real effort to prepare. Posterity, if any, would not be impressed. In the newsletter, we also note Inside Climate News scratching its non-venerable head and demanding to know, quote, why isn't the IRA more of a political winner for Democrats? It should be, they say, because, quote, the landmark climate law is an economic boon, but not an electoral one, at least not yet, end quote. Gosh, think there's any chance that the money is going to well-connected people already firmly on the left and isn't working for regular folks? And another thing. As G.K. Chesterton once observed, there's a tendency for mediocrities to live in the future, lest their feeble accomplishments be compared with things people actually did in the past. And now a Guardian columnist insists that, quote, I woke up to a call from Vincent van Gogh today. He told me he wants the Just Stop Oil protesters who threw soup on his sunflowers to be released immediately, end quote. And while we realize that newspapers run horoscopes, we didn't know that opinion writers were encouraged to do seances. But this one goes on to mention that Van Gogh was desperately unhappy and mentally ill, which might explain why she thinks he'd fit in with the Just Stop Oil crowd. And here's an odd one. Last week we put forward what we thought was a hypothetical example of Mount Everest changing height to illustrate the difference between identifying trends when there is an actual fluctuation and when there isn't. Only to learn from Reuters that in fact Everest is growing. And the cause seems not merely to be the ongoing uplift from the collision of the Indian subcontinent with Eurasia 50 million years ago, but also that the hostile takeover of the Arun by the Kosi River a mere 89,000 years ago increased erosion of the greater Everest plateau, speeding up isostatic rebound. Now, if you're planning to climb it, you don't need to hurry before it vanishes into the sky, as it's only rising some 0.2 to 0.5 millimeters per year. It's unclear because, as usual, it turns out the whole thing is a computer simulation. But even so, you might want to ponder that the Earth is, and always has been, a hugely dynamic place in which even vast mountains don't stay put, so it would be strange to expect rainfall or temperature to do so, absent malevolent human folly. Or, on the other hand, like the Washington Post, you could say, quote, this uplift may have given Everest a slight advantage in a warming world, end quote. And to return to a theme we've mentioned before, among the dismal economies of the old Soviet East Bloc, the German Democratic Republic stood out for its relatively high productivity to the point that there was a quip that the system has not been invented under which the German people cannot work. But apparently even those subjected to communism couldn't foresee modern climate policy. Germany, whose early enthusiastic embrace of the so-called energy transition, or in German, Energiewende, see why Germans don't play Scrabble, has on balance proven to be a disaster. As the New York Sun just put it, quote, Germany emerging as the sick man of Europe, with growth projected at a tenth of a percentage point this year, end quote, which frankly can't have been easy, and it's not something to emulate. Instead, maybe, just maybe, the former engine of European prosperity needs a dramatic turn in energy policy away from Einhorner and back to stuff that works. Also in the newsletter, we return to the theme of climate journalists seeing things that you or I cannot. In particular, in this case, a vast migration of people fleeing the climate-ravaged sunny south to the frigid inland north of the United States. Abraham Lustgarten of ProPublica frets nobly in the New York Times that, quote, Helene was just the latest in a new generation of storms that are intensifying faster and dumping more rainfall as the climate warms. It is also precisely the kind of event that is expected to drive more Americans to relocate as climate change gets worse and the costs of disaster recovery increase, end quote. Now, the piece does admit that, quote, many Americans are still moving into areas considered high risk, lured by air conditioning and sunny weather, end quote, but then hollers that, quote, the economic and physical vulnerabilities they face are becoming more apparent, end quote. Well, only to your computer. They keep moving, seeking climate havens that don't have the miserable winters of Buffalo. And another thing. Last week, we discussed a new reconstruction of atmospheric CO2 and temperature over the last 485 million years that claimed to have found a strong correlation while admitting that there wasn't one in the entire Mesozoic era, which was nearly 200 million years long. And this week, we want to look at how the Washington Post, and others, covered the story. The Post declared that, quote, an ambitious effort to understand the Earth's climate over the past 485 million years has revealed a history of wild shifts and far hotter temperatures than scientists previously realized, offering a reminder of how much change the planet has already endured and a warning about the unprecedented rate of warming caused by humans, end quote. So as usual, what they're telling us is that because the settled science was all wrong, we should believe the settled science. But everything in that passage is essentially wrong. Previous long-term reconstructions, like our Stripes mug, which you can purchase in our merch store, have already revealed wild shifts and hotter temperatures. And there's no proof of an unprecedented warming, since proxies that go back tens or hundreds of millions of years tell us nothing about swings on the scale of a century or two, all of which is the exact opposite of what the reporter said. And another glaring falsehood is, quote, in keeping with decades of past research on climate, the chart hews closely to estimates of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, with temperatures rising in proportion to concentrations of the heat-trapping gas, end quote. In fact, even this tendentious reconstruction admits that, quote, there is no discernible relationship between CO2 and global mean surface temperature, end quote, during the entire Triassic, Jurassic, and Cretaceous periods. Arguably worth reporting, no? Apparently not. But, on a more cheerful note, our cheerful chart number 10 shows Moore's Law. This extraordinary 1965 prediction by engineer and Intel co-founder Gordon Moore that the number of transistors that could be fit on a single computer chip would roughly double every 2 years. Now back then, Moore thought that it would probably only last another decade or so, but it's actually held up for 60 years, which is a major reason why we can now carry what would have been a 1975 supercomputer in our pocket and take it out at any moment to fling misspelled insults at total strangers or search for cats that look like Hitler. No, seriously. It has led to astonishing advances in processor power, data storage, numerical computation, clock speed, machine learning, artificial intelligence, global warming scenarios, internet monitoring, round-the-clock surveillance, state control of misinformation. Okay, a lot went wrong. But at least it does help people like us communicate with people like you and push back against climate doomerism with cheerful charts, including, this week, Moore's Law, including a sparkling contrast between expert graphics in 1965 and those that anyone can do today. In the newsletter, we also talk about hurricanes then and now. Then, in this case, meaning from around 850 to 2000 AD. And it turns out that, yes, there were hurricanes back then, and even further back, long before we had climate. And it turns out that the big swings in hurricane numbers weren't driven by greenhouse gases. It was the ultra-complex internal variability of our ultra-complex climate system, something we learned by talking to climatologist Judith Curry and by reading a study from early in 2024 by a team of 11 scientists who concluded that recent hurricane levels are entirely within the range of long-term natural variability. And now for our salad days. From the CO2Science.org archive, we bring you another fall veggie here in Ontario, the hardy if unglamorous Capsicum annuum L, or bell pepper, green, red, or yellow, which appears well placed to thrive with extra CO2 in the air. It gets more photosynthesis with an extra 300 parts per million, or 600 parts per million, and twice as much with 900 parts per million. So, whether you fry them, barbecue them, broil them, or chop them up raw, use lots of CO2 in that recipe. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I know that one bad storm does not make for a predicted ferocious hurricane season.